change around my team. Yeah, we off the leash. You could look us in the eyes, see we have peace. Black and gold, that's the colors when we go to war. When we step up on that field, you gon' hear my roar. We them Tiger Cats, we them Tiger Cats. We them Tiger Cats, we them Tiger Cats.
Yeah, nobody hitting harder. Better keep your guard up. Cause with everything we draw, we can score it when we wanna.
Welcome to Podskiwiwi. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Michael David Graham.
Michael David Graham?
Yeah, that's right.
Is David actually your middle name?
MDG, baby. Yeah, it's my dad's name.
Well, I knew that. You know what my middle name is?
Rose.
Oh, that would be kind of cool. No, I don't have one.
Oh, weirdo.
Yeah, my parents didn't want to give me one. Neither me nor my brother have a middle name.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
My mom said she doesn't have one. My mom was like, "Well, I don't have one." And my grandma one time was like, "You're a liar. Your middle name's Anne." And then it was. My grandma showed me her birth certificate. Her middle name's Anne. But yeah, no, they didn't give me or my brother a middle name. It's weird. No one used to believe me when I was younger. So whenever you fill out forms and it's like put your middle initial, I would leave it blank, and people would be like, "You didn't fill this out." I was like, "I don't have a middle name." They're like, "What do you mean you don't have a middle name? How do you not have a middle name? Everyone has a middle name." I was like, "No, I don't have one."
Oh yeah. Strange family, Josh.
Yeah, I mean,
not dishing out the middle names. I guess it's, but really, like,
what's the point?
What do you use a middle name for? Like, honestly,
I don't know. Cool initials like yours, MDG.
I guess so.
I don't know. Anyways, we're gonna talk about a Tie Cats win this week. But before we get to that, last week I threw down the gauntlet, Mike. I said if anyone could predict who the top rookie would be in the CFL at the end of the year, that I would personally purchase them a Podskiwiwi shirt from our store of their choosing. We got 12 people that responded to to my challenge. I guess I should call it the Josh challenge, not the Podski challenge. But anyway, of course, there was a number of wildly variant picks. People picked a lot of players from their favorite team, essentially, which I think is fair, that those are most of the rookies you know. One of the reasons I think we didn't pick one ourselves is that outside of a handful of Ticats rookies, we didn't really know some guys across the league. But, we got 12 different picks. So one of the 12 people, I have it written down, so everyone who sent the tweets know that I have them written down. But there's some interesting ones. Someone picked Max Zimmerman, the European receiver for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. I thought that was kind of neat. Jonathan Kongbo was picked. Jalen Ackland was picked. So there's some interesting picks here, and I will be keeping this file on my computer until year's end, and we'll be eliminating people as people go. We'll know in early November who the nine nominees for each team are. That will probably eliminate some people. We'll know who the division nominees are. That will eliminate all but two. And then at the end of the year, if someone was right, hit me up and I'll be buying them a shirt. Mike, you didn't put in a prediction.
Yeah, I'm clueless.
Yeah, I know. We figured that out last week when we were like, we're not doing this. I thought maybe if you'd have a week to sit on it, you would come up with one, but it's cool.
Well, it's cool. No, I didn't know. I didn't want to. It's for the listeners.
It's for
right?
the people.
Wanna...
It's not for us. Yeah.
Yeah.
You want a shirt, exactly. You can get one whenever you want.
Yeah, precisely.
Okay, so let's out of the fun and games, we're going to get unfortunately a little bit serious here talking about the next thing, but what we're talking about is a Ticats victory, which is always nice. It's rare that you and I get to talk about that in week one. This is what, our fifth season covering a team. I think it's their second week one victory, and I think it's their second week one victory since like 2004 or something. It's been a really long time since the Ticats have actually started a season 1-0, but they started 1-0 on Thursday night in the season opener, in their home opener, in the league opener. They beat the Saskatchewan Roughriders 23-17. I thought it was a bit of a sloppy game, to be perfectly honest with you. Now, the weather probably aided in that a little bit, but before we get into sort of like what we liked and disliked and all the things surrounding the game, we have to talk about obviously the big thing to come out of it. And that was on what, the third or fourth play of the game, the hit by Simone Lawrence on Zach Collaros that clearly concussed Collaros, knocked him out of the game, and has subsequently given Simone Lawrence a 2-game suspension from the league that came down early on Monday. So, I mean, what did you think when you saw the hit? What do you think of the suspension, the aftermath, all that stuff? Mike, just what do you think?
I was disappointed when I saw the hit. You know, Simone is a character. He plays hard. I never thought he was a dirty player or anything like that, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But, yeah, I was just a little disappointed. I felt bad for Zach, obviously, with his struggles with concussions throughout the years. It's just so early in the season, you know, it's very unfortunate. It kind of ruined my buzz for this game because it happened so early on. And, you know, it's just unfortunate. I think that it was a very dirty hit. I'm glad that he got suspended, and I hope he sits out the 2 games and doesn't appeal. But, yeah, just overall, I was disappointed in Simone because I know he's not a dirty player.
Yeah, I think the suspension, I think, is warranted. I think it's fair. I think he will appeal because, I mean, who wouldn't, honestly? Like, I've seen some remarks of, oh, if he's truly contrite about what he did, then he won't appeal. But that's nonsense, guys. Two-game suspensions are rare in the CFL. I can think of two off the top of my head. Last year, Kyrie Saber was suspended for 2 games, and that's a guy who was a repeat offender when it comes to headshots especially, but dirty play in particular. Khalif Mitchell, a few years ago, back when he was with the BC Lions, that's a name from the past, he was suspended for 2 games, I believe, for attempting to tear Simeon Rotier's arm off of his body. To me, that's also one of those things where a very heavy suspension is warranted. I think in this case, a heavy suspension is warranted as well. I know people are going to cite precedent and talk about, oh, well, these types of hits from guys who are first-time offenders is usually met with a 1-game suspension. And I believe if this is appealed, it probably gets knocked down to a 1-game suspension, quite frankly. But at the same time, I feel like the CFL is trying to kind of start fresh here. And if this is what we're going to decide these types of hits are worth, I'm okay with that, because in the future, it could be our quarterback or it could be another quarterback from another team and another player from another team causing these hits. I'm okay if the league's kind of wiping the slate clean here of what we did in the past and are trying to set a new standard. And if the standard for these types of hits is 2 games, I'm cool with that. I think we want to eliminate these types of hits from the game. Players don't want them. The league doesn't want them. I totally understand where they're coming from here. The hit itself, I didn't see it live, even though I was at the game. I was standing on the concourse. It was raining. We didn't want to sit in our seats, me and my friends. So we're kind of standing on the concourse. We saw the aftermath of it, of course. There was quite a bit of a delay that allowed us to get to our seats as the rain started to dissipate. But it wasn't something I saw until I got home, quite frankly. Actually, that's not true. I saw it at halftime. I looked, obviously, when I found out what had happened and why there was such a delay in the game. I looked it up and saw it, and it was tough because you're watching on a phone from a tweet, and I'm like, okay, it definitely looks bad, but I'm not sure how bad it looks. Then I rewatched the game on Sunday, and it was like, oh yeah, no, that is much worse than you could see on a little, you know, 5-inch, 6-inch phone screen. It was an unnecessary hit. It was an unacceptable hit. We are trying to get that out of football. So to me, I wish it didn't happen, just like you. I wish it didn't happen to Collaros, because that's a guy who has tried really hard to kind of shed the injury-prone label, and it just seems like every time he gets an opportunity, he just something happens that knocks him out of a game, and it's super unfortunate. But at the same time, I mean, yeah, I'm kind of okay with all the supplemental discipline, and I guess we'll have to see. Probably in a week's time, we'll be talking about it, because I'm sure – like, I know we're not going to talk about if he appeals now because we don't know if he's going to, but I imagine next week we'll have to sit down and discuss whether he appealed or whether he didn't. But I think a 2-game suspension for the hit is perfectly warranted.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, you like to these cases to be black and white. You know, if you throw a helmet hit at a guy when he's going down, then you should be suspended or fined or whatever. But, you know, I think there is some gray area in this one because Zach, this is probably the end of his career. Like, obviously, I have no inside information, but you got to think that he has to consider this now to get another concussion. You just feel bad for him because it just seems like he just gets hit in the helmet a lot by different players. Odell Willis on a couple occasions, and now Simone Lawrence. So Zach wasn't too happy when he was coming off the field. I don't know if you saw that, but he was screaming F-U to Simone. And people said that Simone didn't say anything back, but I thought I saw him say something back. But probably shouldn't say it. I don't know if you saw it. You know, him lipping something back like, "You pussy ass bitch." That's what I thought he said.
Whoa!
But
I did not see that. I'll say I did not see that.
That's what I thought he said. Now, I could be incorrect. I didn't watch it again, but I thought he said something bitch. And so if he did say that, that's unfortunate. But yeah, it's just a very, you know, it's a sad incident for Caleros because I think that he won't be coming back. He's on the sixth game now. And if he does come back, he's going to have to put some serious thought into it because another headshot like that. And, you know, you got to start thinking about your future after football.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you don't want to say it was inevitable because that sort of mitigates Lawrence's culpability in this. But it does feel like, and I'm sure if we go back in time to when the Riders re-signed Caleros, you would have seen people sort of say the same things. I saw a few, once he was put on the sixth team, a few comments about like, man, what a great idea it was giving a nearly $200,000 signing bonus to a quarterback who was going to end up on the sixth game anyway. But like, regardless of that, that should not in any way diminish Simone's culpability here on the hit because, yeah, maybe it happens 6 weeks from now, maybe it happens 10 weeks from now, who knows? But it happened now, and I think at the end of the day, he needs to take responsibility for his actions. I think the league has done a good thing, and I'm the first one to rip the league for when they do something stupid. I take heat from it online all the time when I go after the league, and I'm going to go after the league for something later in the show for something they did regarding supplementary discipline that I thought was completely asinine. But in this case, I think we have to applaud the league for taking a hardline stance. And I think now we as fans, because there was a lot of like, well, should he get one game? Should he get two games? Should he just get a fine? We didn't really know. Now I think we know what this is going to be going forward. And I think that's only a good thing for the game itself, for the players, for the league, and for the fans.
Yeah. And two games is a lot when you're only playing 18 games in a season, right? So
it's the equivalent of, sorry to cut you off, Mike, but it's the equivalent of what I've seen, approximately 20 games in basketball or hockey. And how often do you see 20 game suspensions given to players in either of those leagues? It's a pretty significant suspension.
Yeah, you'd have to do something pretty egregious to get 20 games in the NHL. So two games is a good number. It'll probably get appealed and brought down to one, which I disagree with. But we're just going to have to see what happens going forward. But I'm glad what the CFL did. They were quick, they were swift, and they just made the decision, a day or two after the game, not wait like a week like we've seen in the past. So that's a good sign from the league.
Well, and I like that they took enough time where they let sort of emotions, like if they could have easily come out right after the game and gone, we're suspending him for four games, and everyone would have been like, yeah, but emotions were running high. They took their time, but they didn't take enough time, like you said. They took a weekend, essentially. The game was on Thursday. They announced the suspension on Monday. I believe it was Saturday that he met with the people in the league office about this. So, like, it went rather quickly, but at the same time, they took enough time in order to sort of let emotions calm down and look at this from a logical, reasonable perspective. And I think at the end of the day, they came away with a very reasonable punishment for a hit that I think fans of all nine teams and fans of just the game of football want to see eliminated from the game anyway.
Yeah, now can we get into some Burris bashing, which I know you love?
Oh, we can all.
I know you love.
We can get into some Burris bashing. All right, bashing. So you don't even have to give me a reason to do that.
True. So you were obviously at the game, so you didn't see the halftime show, but Burris took it upon himself to make this incident about him, essentially. So he brought up the incident from, you know, two or three years back when he had an injured leg and Simone hit him, in the hip, essentially. I didn't think it was a dirty hit. He was just trying to tackle him. But Burris made it about himself on the halftime show, basically saying that players like him don't belong in the league and blah, blah, blah. He's a repeat offender, which is not true. He's never been fined or suspended as far as I know. So Burris gets one of my bozos. I got to give a bozo to Simone for the hit, which was, you know, a stupid decision by him. But I'm also giving a bozo to Burris as well for making that that play about himself.
I remember that play very vividly. It was 2015. It was here in Hamilton. It was the first of the back-to-back games between Ottawa and Hamilton that was going to decide first in the division. I remember the hit. That was sort of the start of my feud with our nation. I had a lot of people come at me about that hit. I posted still shots on the internet. The league didn't fine Simone Lawrence for the hit. He was fined for his comments afterwards, his somewhat ill-advised comments that he made about Burris after the game. He was fined for those. But the hit was completely legal. I stand by the hit being legal. Burris had broken the pocket and was running. He wasn't protected like a quarterback. He didn't slide. Simone Lawrence hit him in the thigh. Burris was being a little whiny baby. No. And that was actually the start of me disliking Henry Burris, too, to be quite honest. That was sort of the, man, would he just shut up and play football, essentially? Like, stop talking. And he, yeah, that's, I mean, you told me before the show that we were going to talk about this. So I wasn't surprised when you told me that this is what happened, because it's Henry Burris. How can he not make everything about himself?
Yeah, and I don't think we have to talk much more about it. You know, Burris is a bozo, and we all know it.
Yeah. Let's talk more about the game then, Mike. And despite the fact that the Ticats won, there was just something about this game that felt off to me, especially offensively. I just felt like there was – the offense wasn't in sync. Throws were – I don't know. I'm kind of having a hard time trying to – come up with the words as to how I felt about this, but it just felt to me like there was a lack of rhythm, and like people weren't on the same page. Did you sort of get the same feeling when you watched the game?
Yeah, I got the exact same feeling, and I wonder if it's you know, something to do with this new offense that has been put in. You know, June Jones left, as we know, very close to the season, left for the XFL gig. So, and then Tommy Condell slides in, and you know, I don't want to speak for you, but I think that both of us were pretty confident that this offense would gel pretty well right off the bat, because Condell has been around before. He's been with the Ticats. He knows Mazzoli, and Mazzoli knows him. So I didn't expect these hiccups in the first game, and there were a lot of them. You're right, they just did not look in sync. Mazzoli kind of didn't look like himself. He seemed like he was nervous in the pocket, even though the offensive line did a pretty damn good job at protecting him. He just seemed rushed. He was throwing off his back foot a lot. He when he was trying to throw over the zones, he wasn't making it to the receiver, or he was throwing it too far. Overall, just not a very good game for Mazzoli. And, you know, the numbers aren't terrible. He was 17 for 28, 169 yards, which is, yeah, pretty bad. But one TD and no interceptions. So, but he just didn't look like he normally does.
So this is the weird thing here, too. We're talking about a win, but we're talking about how it was kind of like an unimpressive win, I guess would be the best way to do it. And we're talking about a quarterback who last year put up gaudy numbers and didn't win. They went 8-10. He lost more games than he won, quote unquote. I'm not a big believer in QB wins, but he lost more games than he won. But in this game, what does he do? He's reasonably efficient, 61%, I think his completion percentage was around there.
60.7.
So basically 61%. Doesn't turn the ball over. Is sacked just one time. And that's on a play when he kept his eyes downfield and just didn't see the defender hit him. Yes, he threw for under 200 yards. So obviously that means he threw for under 300 yards. But he did all the like last year when he did all those amazing things, and he was throwing touchdowns, but he was turning the ball over, and he had all those 300-yard games. People were saying, oh, well, it doesn't matter because they're not winning. Well, now he doesn't do those things. He doesn't turn the ball over at all. No fumbles, no interceptions. And the team wins, and we're still – I won't say we're criticizing him. I think everyone who listens to the show knows and understands that we are big Mazzoli backers. But it's weird how, like, we can come off a win and still talk about how the quarterback didn't perform well, but last year when he was performing well and the team was, like, it's weird, right? Like, you would think that those two things would go hand in hand, and yet they don't. Maybe it's not all about the quarterback?
Perhaps, Josh. Perhaps. But, you know, you do look at those numbers and they're not great.
No, they aren't. They're not at all. They're pedestrian.
Yeah, and I think, like, obviously, with that offensive line in front of him and, you know, he has a talented receiving group, maybe you could argue that it's not as good as last year's. But I do believe that this offense will get turning, you know, fairly quickly. Mazzoli in the pocket with all that time, with those guys in front of him, it's going to be a powerful offense, because we still got guys like Brandon Banks and Mike Jones and Braylon Addison and, of course, Luke Tasker. So I'm not too worried, but I was a little disappointed in the offensive production this week.
Yeah, one person – let's talk some positives for a second. One person offensively that I think nobody is disappointed with was Sean Thomas Erlington. I thought he was tremendous in this game, Mike. I'll bring up his numbers, and then you can chime in with your thoughts on how he played. 11 carries for 68 yards, and that's a 6.2 yards per carry average, and he chipped in with 3 catches for 35 yards. So all told, he gets 14 touches in the game, 103 yards total offense, and he missed quite a bit of the fourth quarter after suffering an injury, which hopefully isn't too long term. But Mike, I thought he was absolutely tremendous in this game, and maybe outside of William Powell was the best player on the field for both teams in this one.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have been so concerned with the departure of Alex Green, eh?
Indeed.
Because STE it looked tremendous. This guy's a talented kid. You know, he has his famous hurdle that he does, and he just was producing at a high rate in this game. Now, he didn't get close to 100 yards rushing, but that's okay. He, every time he touched the ball, he seemed to gain, you know, close to 10 yards. So I am really high on this kid. And to think that he's a Canadian is just, it just adds so much to the team. So I think that he's going to have a massive year. I think he's going to be over 1,000 yards if he's healthy. I was a little worried about him when he was on the ground because I thought they were stabilizing his head, and I obviously it didn't turn out to be that serious, but I had a little mini heart attack there for a second because this kid could really shine this year.
Yeah, it looked like they were looking at his elbow or his shoulder, and then a little bit on his neck, maybe a little bit, but I don't know. It didn't look too. I don't know. I think maybe, you know, I think he went out with like half of a quarter left. So I don't think the Ticats had the ball much after that. But, I mean, 100 yards, if he averages 100 yards of total offense a game, which, I mean, it, you know, that's unlikely, but that's what he got in this one. That's 1,800 total yards in the season. Whether he gets 1,000 receiving yards or 1,000 rushing yards or whatever, it doesn't, to me, if he's putting up, you know, anywhere from 1,400 to 1,600 total yards of offense, I'm pretty happy with that production from the running back.
Absolutely. The guy is just, you know, he's a dual threat. He can catch the ball and he run the ball, obviously. It's just really exciting to see, you know, a guy that comes in and he's been with the team. I think he was, an eighth round pick? So
eighth round pick three years ago. Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
You don't find starting caliber players that late in the draft. And the Ticats may have found, and again, it's one game. And I know he had a game last year, so this isn't an anomaly. But they may have found the next, you know, great Canadian running back with an eighth-round pick. That's nuts.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And one other thing that I liked, unless you have more to add to the Sean Thomas stuff.
Oh, no, not at all. I was just ready to talk about some offensive line.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll just throw in this real quick. My other like was Frankie Williams. You know, big punt return touchdown. You know, 68 yards. He looked tremendous on it. The blocking was really good. I'm seeing signs of a couple of years ago when Reinbold was in charge of this special teams unit. And you know, I'm just going to throw this out there too. I thought Liram Haralahu had a really good game as well. You know, kicking the ball, field goals. He was 3 for 3. He had a long of 48, I believe. So, you know, the long field goals were never a problem for him, and it seems to be carrying over into this season. And I don't believe he punted a ball out of bounds in this game. So that's an improvement.
There were no kicks out of bounds. He had one late in the game that he pinned in the corner. That was for the Riders' final drive. They started their drive inside their 20-yard line. I thought special teams as a whole, you mentioned Williams and you mentioned Hirolahu. I thought specials as a whole were really good in this. I thought their coverage units were really solid. I want to shout out Marcus Tucker in particular. He had a couple of big special teams tackles in this one, which is, you know, he's a rookie American player who's a receiver. Saw some time at receiver after Luke Tasker left the game at halftime, but didn't really see much action, only caught one ball. But on specials, he made a couple of tackles. That's a young kid trying to make a name for himself on the team. I like to see that. Obviously, the Frankie Williams punt return is probably the biggest play of this game in the positive for either side. The tenacity that he had at the end of that run where he's getting tackled by two guys and he just won't go down until he gets in the end zone. It's stuff like that you like to see. But, yeah, for sure, for me, the special teams, I thought overall, the coverage units, the blocking units, the kicking units, the punting, kickoff, everything. I just thought special teams – but I think special teams and what they did in this game is a big reason why the Ticats won this game. I thought the defense was okay for the most part. I thought the offense was mediocre and then had a few plays here and there, like the touchdown pass to Banks, what was really nice. Erlington, obviously, he had a pretty nice game. But for the most part, the offense, as we talked about, wasn't that great. I think if not for special teams, I don't think the Ticats win this game. And I don't just mean that because they won by six and they scored a touchdown on specials. I mean, even if that doesn't get to the end zone and they score anyway, you know what I mean? Like, they don't get that return. They don't get some of these great tackles from guys like Tucker. They don't get the great punting from Hirolahu that they got in this one. I mean, special teams kind of won the game for the Ticats in this one.
They did win the game. I mean, Hirolahu had 9 points and then the touchdown on the punt return. So, you know, that's 16 out of the 23 points came from special teams. So, and then you look at the numbers, like offensively, the Riders, they won like every category.
Mm-hmm.
366 yards to 232. They won the time of possession. They won the rushing. They won the passing. It's just, yeah, if it wasn't for the special teams, we would be 0-1 right now.
So the other thing I want to talk about in the positive is the offensive line. I just mentioned it a little while ago. I thought they were awesome in this, Mike. Aside from a couple of miscues by the new center, Demetrius Rainey, who was playing for Mike Filer, who they talked about him being hurt, but he was in uniform, so I don't know if it's necessarily an injury thing or what's going on, but they decided to start an American at center. He had the one play where everyone else moved but him, and he didn't snap the ball. That's kind of a mistake. And then there was a quarterback exchange where it was in short yardage, and Mazzoli seemed to have trouble holding onto the ball. But outside of that, I mean, they went up against Micah Johnson, Zach Evans, A.C. Leonard, and Charleston Hughes and didn't give up a sack to the defensive line. The Riders might have the best defensive line in the CFL, and they didn't get a sack in this one, and there weren't a lot of even times when they were close. Like, I don't recall – maybe I'll have to look at the stats, but I don't recall Charleston Hughes – he had two tackles in this game, one for a loss, but that's not really all that much. Micah Johnson had three like, these guys didn't do a whole heck of a lot, and that's a lot of money and a lot of talent on a defensive line that the Ticats kind of revamped offensive line was able to keep at bay. And I know you're a big offensive line guy, Mike, so what did you think about the O-line in this one?
Yeah, I thought they played exceptional. They, like you just mentioned, the pass protection was really good. And I thought the, you know, running the ball, they were spectacular as well. They really gave that line a push. You know what I mean? It's like, I think they could have really ran the ball a lot more in this game. And maybe the offense could have put up a lot more points. Cause there was a time in that third quarter where I think they ran the ball like about four times in a row. And I said to myself, you know, they could keep running the ball, and, you know, they were averaging, you know, a first down every two runs. So I really wanted them to keep pounding the rock. They decided to go with a pass, and then it kind of fell apart. They got a field goal from there. But I thought they could have just kept running the ball and maybe would have got a touchdown. So the offensive line was great in the pass and run game.
So speaking of the run game, the one thing about this game that I would like to touch on before we – sort of move on to other things that I didn't much care for was the run defense. And I think that that's pretty obvious. You look at the numbers, you mentioned that the Riders won the rushing battle. They ran the ball 32 times in this game for 172 yards. William Powell had 20 carries for 104 yards and a touchdown. And it seemed that even when everyone in the stands and probably everyone watching at home knew the Riders were going to run the football, and they did, the Ticats just couldn't stop them. With all that beef up front, with all that talent that they acquired in Jagaret Davis and Dylan Wynn to go along with Ted Laurent, and this one, Julian Hauser, who, as an aside, I thought he had a really good game. I think he got a lot of pressure. He was the main reason Dylan Wynn got his sack in this one. So just a little shout out to him. I thought he was tremendous against the Riders. But on the whole, just the run defense was porous, I think is a kind way of putting it. And they're coming up on a game this week against the Argos where, is it James Wilder? Is it Terrell Sutton? Who knows? But they're going to be coming up against another team with a pretty good back, and they're going to have to get this run D sorted out because it was not good against Saskatchewan.
No, it was very, very bad. You'd think with all the talent we have up front and then the linebackers, I know we lost some guys, but I still think our linebackers are pretty darn good, that they would have played better. I'm not sure if it's a Mark Washington thing. I don't know how his run defense has been in the last couple of years. I never looked up at that stat. Maybe it's a scheme issue. I don't know, but that definitely needs to improve because you're right. I mean, even though I'm not a big fan of James Wilder Jr., the guy is a talented back, and so is Terrell Sutton, and they can throw in Chris Rainey for a little change up as well. So they better be prepared or they might get torched next week. But I will say the one thing about the defensive line that was that really impressed me was that third and two,
Riders,
and Big Teddy went right through. I don't know if it was the center. It might have been the center, but he just
blew him up. It was fantastic.
Demolished him. Yeah, it was. That's why we have Big Teddy on our team, because he can do things like that.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we didn't do it during the preseason because it's kind of hard, but we're bringing back our Podsky Player of the Week for 2019, and we're going to give out our first one this week, Mike. We've already talked at length about him, but why don't you tell everyone who we bestow the award on this week?
Podsky Player of the Week is Sean Thomas Erlington. He had 11 carries for 68 yards, a long of 19, an average of 6.2 yards, which is phenomenal. He did caught some balls through the air, three catches for 35 yards. He just looked like a smooth runner. He knew where to hit the holes. He did a great job this game, and he is the first Podsky Player of the Week for 2019.
Yeah, hopefully the injury doesn't keep him out too long. I want to see more of him on the field, as I know you do as well. Let's talk some news. Little light on the news in Ticats land this week. They signed a couple of players. One was Mexican kicker, and I'm going to butcher this name, Gabriel Amavizca Ortiz. He was actually selected by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers in the third round of January's Mexican draft. That is the global player that the Ticats decided to suit up this week against the Riders, which tells me that the Ticats have absolutely no intention of playing a global player actually on the field, which I'm perfectly fine with. If they don't think that they have a guy that can actually contribute, why would you put him on the field? So this is kind of an interesting workaround for the Cats to have a backup kicker, which most teams do not have. They also added international defensive end Corin Crump, which is a fantastic name, to the practice roster. They didn't really start a ton of defensive linemen in the last game, but Adrian Tracy, once again, as seems to be a bit of an issue with him, is nicked up quite a bit. So he's missing some time. We know Jamal Westerman didn't play in this game. But I guess, you can never have too many good pass rushers, right? So Ticats go and add a defensive end. Mike, any thoughts on either of these moves?
Not particularly. the defensive line guy, I mean, it's an interesting move. Maybe we'll see a little Crump in a Ticats uniform later this season. But other than that, global player, nothing to talk about there, really. He probably won't kick a ball this season unless something happens to our starter. So, yeah, not much to add to it.
All right, let's go into some CFL news then. And the big news from the week is obviously what was announced last week, and that is that Kevin Glenn has officially hung up his cleats. Now, I know the Riders reached out to him after Caleros went down, but I guess he turned them down. Kevin Glenn, after, what is it, 18 seasons, I believe, in the CFL, is finally done. I was hoping he would hold on to one day play for the Atlantic Schooners. Let's not turn this into a debate on whether or not that team will ever actually exist, Mike. I just thought it would be funny if Glenn would find a way to play for 10 CFL teams. As we all know, he played for, or didn't play for, but was at one point the property of every single team in the CFL. He spent 3 years with the Ticats, guiding them to 3 straight playoff appearances. He had one season in particular, 2010 season, 5,100 yards, 33 touchdowns to only 17 interceptions. Do you have a favorite Kevin Glenn moment, whether it be with the Ticats or elsewhere?
Yeah, it's got to be with the Ticats in the Eastern Semifinal 2011 in Montreal.
Yep.
In the Big O. That game was just tremendous to watch. The yards that were put up. Kevin Glenn had a great game. Bakari Grant had a great game, a big touchdown catch. Evan Coburn had a really good game. It was kind of like we finally got over the hump. We finally beat the Alouettes, and Kevin Glenn was a big part of that. So that would have to be my favorite Kevin Glenn moment, even though there's a lot of them out there. That would have to be the one for me.
Yeah, the one I'm going to pick, Mike, 2009, East Semi. Ticats down by 2 touchdowns. He brings them back to tie the game. I still get goosebumps when I've watched the clip a few times. Rod Black's call. I know people give Rod Black a lot of crap, but the call when Kevin Glenn finds a wide open Marquay McDaniel in the front of the end zone, and he goes, the Ticats have come back to tie, and Iverwind Stadium is going absolutely ballistic. I was at that game. I remember just everyone jumping up and down and high-fiving. People don't remember. I'm sure a lot of people that listen to us do, but some people don't remember. This was the first playoff appearance for this team in 5 years. There were some lean years. We talk about it all the time, the lean years of the mid-2000s where this team was, if they won 5 games, they were lucky. So for the team to finally turn it around, to make the playoffs, to host a playoff game, and to have it be kind of a thrilling classic. They ended up losing the game, which unfortunately for Glenn's career here in Hamilton was kind of it's kind of what happened. They won, they lost more than they won, but that actually 09 sort of where the whole Forever 500 thing kind of started. But that game in particular, where just to finally have playoff football back in Hamilton and to have that one play where he ties the game and everyone's going crazy. That's the thing I think I'll remember most about Kevin Glenn's career. Like, obviously, you know, there's the touchdown pass to Milt Stegall when he's in Winnipeg, and he obviously had a bunch of wonderful career moments around. But when it comes to the Ticats, I agree with you. The 2011 East Semi beating Montreal and all what that meant is good. But the first playoff game back in Hamilton in 5 years, that's something special.
That was against the BC Lions, right?
The
BC Printer, yeah.
Yeah.
Estella had a big catch in that game, too, I think.
He had 2 touchdowns in that one. I think he had the touchdown that put them down by 2 to set up the 2-point convert for the tie, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think you're right, and it was a nice catch too, if I recall.
I think it was a diving catch in the end zone.
I think so. Yeah, it was. That was an exciting game. Unfortunately, we lost it, but yeah, I can see that. If I was in the crowd, that would have been a good memory for me as well.
Yeah. Okay. So something I thought we could do this year that's a little bit of a change up from last year. Is we would talk about sort of the other games, like kind of, you know, just not spend too much time on it, but, you know, give our thoughts on some of the things we saw across the league in the week that was. So there were 3 other games this week in the CFL. The first one was obviously the Ticats and the Riders that we've talked about at length. The second one was Friday night. I believe you're at this game, if I'm not mistaken, in Edmonton. The Owls went into Edmonton and came out with, I thought, looked fairly impressive, especially once they had to make a change at quarterback and brought in Vernon Adams. But at the end of the day, Edmonton beat Montreal 32-25 in what was a surprisingly entertaining contest, because I think any game involving the Owls, everyone's kind of thinking, maybe won't be that good. But any takeaways from this one? You were at the game. What was it like to be back on back in Commonwealth for the first time since the Grey Cup.
It was very good. It's always good to watch live football, and I was impressed with Trevor Harris's first game as an Eskimo.
He looked good.
Three touchdown passes. C.J. Gable had a nice touchdown grab for they look good. The defense didn't look great, but overall, like all the games were pretty entertaining, but this one was really good.
I think the Owls have a bit of a quarterback controversy. I think they played a lot better with Vernon Adams under center than they did with your boy Tony Pumpkin.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. We've always known that Vernon Adams has had potential. You know, he had a pretty good collegiate career with Oregon. You knew that he was a very, very athletic guy. And now he's kind of showing that he can throw the ball, too. So, yeah, there might be a little controversy between Tony Pumpkin and Mr. Vernon Adams. And, you know, maybe that's a good thing for the Alouettes.
I mean, if they have two capable quarterbacks, that's better than the zero they've had for the last 5 years.
Yeah, true that.
Yes. Saturday saw our first doubleheader of the year. And the first one was, I think, easily called the shocker of the weekend. Dominic Davis and his four interceptions somehow got the win in Calgary over the Stampeders, 32-28. You know, big hat tip to my boy over at Three Down, Santino Filoso. He did pick the Ottawa Redblacks to win. Of course, he's a Redblacks fan, so you don't get full credit, Santino, for the pick, but you get some credit. But man, this game to me is why quarterback wins should not be a thing. A quarterback throws four interceptions and quote unquote wins the game. Come on, man. But this was a stunning, stunning result. We rarely see Calgary lose at home, and to lose to a team that throws four picks, including a pick six, that's almost unheard of.
Yeah, I mean, what does it say about Calgary?
They didn't look good in the second half. I know you're gonna hammer on your boy Bo Levi Mitchell, but they did not look good in the second half at all.
No, I think it says a lot that a team that is predicted to be, you know, if not in the basement, then near the basement of the East Division, comes in there, throws four interceptions, and still wins the game. I mean, the offense looked average for Calgary. The defense looked okay. Bo looked okay. You know, maybe this is the time that the Stampeders started dropping off. I know it's only one game, but man, this it just doesn't happen to them, especially at home.
Do you think maybe all the losses they've suffered have finally caught up to them?
You got to think that eventually it will, you know, like any other team, any other organization, they lose that many players, you know, there's going to be an effect. So I don't see how there can't be one with the Calgary Stampeders this year. You know, we're going to see that Bo isn't as great as everyone thinks he is. I guarantee it. He got sacked a couple times. I don't think he has the offensive line in front of him that he's had for many years. He's not going to be able to just sit back there and then overthrow receivers and blame the receivers. So I'm hoping, I have my fingers crossed, that this is just, you know, they're 2-16 or 3-15, something terrible. And then Bo can blame everyone else but himself.
You know what's funny about this game is it kind of dovetails into the Cats game a little bit for me. What Ottawa did at the end there, where they drove down the field and scored the winning points with, like, what, 75 seconds left or something? One of the things I took away from the Ticats game, and I guess we're going back to that for a little bit, is the Riders had the ball with, like, 55 seconds left and a chance to go down and win the game. And in the past, the Ticats would have given up that lead and they would have lost on a last-second touchdown. But they didn't in this one. They got the interception on the Hail Mary, and they won the game.
It was also a third-string quarterback, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. But at the same time, it's still – you're telling me a third-string – Brandon Bridge once came into Hamilton and, like, lit him up. So it's like that guy's true. Not even in the league anymore. Like, that was sort of the Ticats' DNA. Like, they'd hang around, and then they'd lose games to teams that they should beat. Like, they were – I don't think either team in the Ticats game played particularly well. But I think if you were to look at it from, like, were the Ticats a better team, I guess, slightly – but, like, usually those are games they lose against quote-unquote inferior opponents. They were playing a third-string quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, that's the type of thing that the Ticats of the past few years would have lost that game. And then at the end of the year when they're 8-10, we look back and go, well, here's how they could have been, like, 11-7. How do you lose on a Hail Mary? You know what I mean? That's what
Something comes to mind when you say that. It's Drew Willey.
Exactly.
You know, driving down the field in the last minute against
the Ticats. In McMaster, throwing a touchdown to Nick Grigsby. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. They lost to Drew Willey, for crying out loud. Anyway, I bring this up because the Stamps, that's something the Stamps don't do. When this was happening and Ottawa had the ball, I'm thinking, okay, well, the Stamps are going to get a stop and they're going to kneel this one out and they're going to win by three. That's what they do. And then when Ottawa drove the field on them and scored, it's like, are they going to actually lose it? Like, it was just so surprising to see Calgary look mortal for the first time in a long time that it does make me wonder, like I said to you just a few minutes ago, like, are all these losses finally catching up to them? I guess we'll find out.
Mm-hmm. And then the last game of the season, they got BC against Winnipeg.
Last
what do you think about this
last
one?
Game of the season, last game of the week.
Last game of the week.
Jeez, Mike, it's week season. One. You're already hoping the season's over? Good Lord.
I'm done with it, man. I'm done.
Anyway, yeah, where we Winnipeg goes into BC and beats the Lions in what was also a very entertaining football game. My takeaway from this, Mike, Winnipeg is as good as advertised. They look, I won't say unbeatable because no team is unbeatable, but they, after 1 week, they're the best team in the CFL right now.
Yeah. I thought Matt Nichols looked really good. You know, there's a lot of detractors about Matty. Winnipeg fans and fans around the league, and understandably, you know, he's never really got over the hump yet. But I think that he's a solid quarterback, and he's going to show that this year. And I hope that, you know, Chris Streveler doesn't get, you know, the fans don't get on Nichols too much about getting Streveler in the game, because I think that Matt's gonna do really good things this year. And you got Andrew Harris, which I've been not a huge fan of over the years, but I will admit that he's probably, you know, probably the best running back in the league at this point. So, yeah, they looked really good. BC surprised me a bit that they, you know, it was a relatively close game throughout it, but then they kind of fell off near the end of the game. You saw flashes of what Mike Riley can do in that offense, you know, early on with him and Burnham. They seemed to really have a good connection. You know, he was throwing the ball downfield quite a bit. So BC loses, but I see a lot of bright spots for them going forward.
Yeah, I think, not to overuse a cliche, but I think the Lions will take a little bit to gel. And then once they do, they're going to be super dangerous. That offense with Riley and John White and Brian Burnham and Daron Carter, like, that's an offense that's going to score a lot of points. And I think the defense is good, but I think we'll need some work. Like, BC looks to me like a team that might get into Labor Day and go, man, they're like 4-5 or 4-6 or however many games they play before Labor Day, and go, man, they're kind of, maybe they're hovering around fourth place, maybe they're even in fifth, and then we'll blink, it'll be November, and they'll have rolled off like 8 wins in 9 games, and we'll be second in the West. You know what I mean? Like, they're a team that once everything starts to gel and starts to click, they're going to be a tough team to beat.
Yeah, I think they're the sky's the limit for them, and the same with the Bombers. You know, I picked BC 1, Winnipeg 2, I believe. So, you know, they both showed a lot of good stuff, and BC has some stuff to work on, but Winnipeg looks like the class of the league right now.
I think BC in defeat looked better than Ottawa and Hamilton did in victory.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. They, you know, they. Him and Burnham really, I mean, Burnham is like, I think he's a little bit underrated. He's like one of the best. I know he had a couple drops later on in the game, but this guy is just spectacular catching the ball in traffic. You know, he just, him and Riley are going to be a tremendous tandem.
All right. So I said earlier that I was going to rip the CFL for something, and I guess now's the time to do it. How the hell did they rescind Jonathan Rose's suspension? I just don't get this, Mike. You named Burris and Simone your bozo. Slapdick of the week goes to the Canadian Football League and Commissioner Randy Ambrosi for this bullshit, quite frankly. For those that don't remember, in the East Final last year, Jonathan Rose two-hand shoves an official during a melee on the sidelines. He is suspended, I believe it was Monday or Tuesday of the following week, suspended for a game, appealed the suspension, played in the Grey Cup, had an interception in the Grey Cup, but Ottawa lost. Then we don't hear anything about it for a while, and quite frankly, I believe the league was hoping we'd forget. Both people in the fandom and in the media would just forget about this. Then what was it? Maybe 2 or 3 days before the season starts, they mentioned that, oh yeah, so here's what happened. Greg Ellingson, for failing to provide a breath sample, is going to only be fined, and Jonathan Rose for shoving an official is only going to be fined. How is this allowed? I'm not even getting into conspiracies or getting into woe is me stuff, but we as Ticat fans have dealt with two instances in the past couple of years of members of the team striking an official and being reprimanded for it. Ken Austin, I think, famously slapped a referee's hand in frustration. He was banned from the sidelines for a game and fined $10,000. Will Hill grabbed an official during a game in Saskatchewan and was suspended for one game. How has the league decided now that abusive officials, physical abusive officials, is now simply worth a fine? Everything they got right in the Simone Lawrence supplementary discipline situation, they got 100% wrong on this. They should be ashamed of themselves. I know it'll never happen, but man, how great would it have been if the officials, because of this, decided, you know what, we're walking off the job. We fear for our safety. We fear that you're not going to take our safety seriously. You're basically saying it's open season on referees, because from here on out, anyone that gets into an altercation with a referee, a physical altercation with a referee, will be able to point at this and go, well, it's not as bad as what he did, so I shouldn't get a – you know what I mean? Like, this sets such a bad precedent going forward. All the good precedent they set with Simone's suspension in two games for unnecessary, unacceptable hits, they completely undid that when it comes to Jonathan Rose in this. I don't understand how the CFL could do it. I'm ashamed of the league for doing this. I think they've done a disservice to everyone involved, from players to fans, and especially the officials. I think it's disgusting that they would rescind the suspension. And like I said, I think they should be ashamed of themselves. This is absolutely unacceptable as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I don't really like to rip the league, but I'm going to have to agree with you on this. You just can't be doing that. You can't be, you know, two-hand shoving a referee. You know, they're just doing their job. They're not supposed to be in the heat of the moment. They're not supposed to be in the heat of the battle. They're not supposed to be touched. So for them to rescind it, I just don't understand. And I totally agree with your, you know, being disgusted. I'm disgusted too about it. It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
It's something that should be so cut and dry. Like, this isn't, there's no shades of gray here. You don't touch an official. Like, this is not like, oh, maybe the guy slipped and that's why he put the shoulder to the helmet as opposed to the shoulder to the chest, or, oh, the quarterback ducked and that's why he took it. You know what I mean? Like, those, you can argue semantics on that. This, to me, is black and white, cut and dry. You do not put your hands on an official, period. It should be, at a minimum, a one-game suspension, if not more. And what the CFL did here is despicable in my eyes. And if I'm a referee, I'm thinking twice about whether or not I want to referee a game for the CFL.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And, you know, you'd hate to say this, but hopefully going for the next time someone, you know, slaps a referee or shoves a referee, they'll get at least a game or two. Like, you can't be doing this. It's pretty dumb decision by the league. I don't know what they think they're going to gain from not suspending this guy, but yeah, it's a bad look for the league.
All right, Mike, let's close out the show by talking about something fun, and that is another football game. This time it is our Ticats traveling up the QEW for a 4 p.m. kickoff at BMO Field to take on the very well-rested Toronto Argonauts. Ticats obviously come into this game at 1-0 after their victory over the Riders. The Argos had a bye in week one and come into this game at 0-0, obviously. So it's a battle of undefeateds, I guess, in a way. Can I be honest with you here, Mike? I'm a little worried about this one. I think the Argos are going to be better than people think. I think they have – I hesitate to say better coach because it's hard to be a better coach than Mark Trestman, but I think they have a better coach for this team and these players at this point in Corey Chamblin. I think he's more of a player's coach and a little bit more lenient with the way things go in the modern sort of coaching of football as opposed to Mark Trestman was. I think James Franklin is due for a bounce back year. I think people forgot that just a couple of years ago, he was the belle of the ball. He was the apple of everyone's affection. He was the guy that was going to be the next great quarterback. The Argos are talented offensively. We mentioned the running backs earlier. They signed Darrell Walker this offseason. They still have S.J. Green. Armonte Edwards is a fabulous number three option. I don't know, man. They're coming off a bye. The Ticats looked less than impressive in their victory in week one. This kind of, in as much as the Ticats are favorites, I guess, in this game, this kind of has upset written all over it to me. What about you?
Well, I would tend to agree with you on this, Josh, because of my logic of 9-9 forever. But
they start one. But, they start 1-0. They got to finish 1-1, right?
Yeah. But and I think you make some good points. I think that they're a talented bunch. You know, they can run the ball. They have talented receivers. James Franklin has a connection with Darrell Walker from his time at Edmonton. So I think there's a lot of talent there, and they could do some damage. And I also think that Corey Chamberlain will have that defense ready to go as well. And as always, there'll be 30,000 strong in the stands, 30,000 Argos fans. So that'll be tough to deal
well,
with all
I'll
that
noise.
Well,
I'll be at the game, so that's all that matters.
Oh, that's true. Yes. So does that mean I have to run the Podsky account again?
Yeah, you do. Sorry, buddy.
Oh. Dang, nabbit. No. I enjoy doing it. But I'm gonna go wild here, Josh. I'm gonna say the Ticats win this game, though. I think that Jeremiah Mazzoli is gonna have a bounce back game. He's gonna be a little bit more comfortable in this offense. Sean Thomas Erlington is back. I think he'll have a good game as well. And this defense is gonna, you know, I think they're gonna have a better showing. It makes me a little nervous with the talent in the backfield of the Argonauts with a guy like James Wilder Jr. who can play really well. At times, Terrell Sutton, who's an experienced veteran that, you know, has had a great career in the CFL. And there's also a guy that like Chris Rainey that they can use to switch it up a little bit. So I think the Ticats will win, but it will be by a very small margin.
Yeah, I think if anyone thinks this is going to be a blowout either way, I think they're mistaken. There's just something about maybe I'm starting to turn to you and I'm starting to think that 500 is the best this team can do. But, like, I don't know. You talked about the defense, but I think Toronto's defense is their strength, their big strength in that defense, is that defensive line. It's Sean Lemon. It's Cleon Lang. It's those guys there. We saw the Ticats offensive line kind of take control and win the battle against the Riders defensive line, which, like I said earlier, I think is, if not, it's one of the best, if not the best, in the entire league. So I feel like that those two sort of negate each other. I don't think – you got to think if Mazzoli gets time and all those weapons out there, you got to think that they'll be able to – I think the Ticats receivers are better than the Argos secondary, so you got to think that there'll be some plays to be made there, especially with Brandon Banks. Brandon Banks is a bit of an Argo killer in a way. He tends to have some of his best games, some of his biggest games against the Argos, Labor Day in particular, but even outside of that, he tends to torch them pretty regularly. So I don't know. Maybe the more you talked about it, then the more optimistic I am, but I think this is going to be a tight one, and it would not shock me if we're sitting here a week from now talking about the Ticats losing. I hope we're not. Hope we're talking about the 2-0 Ticats heading into a back-to-back with Montreal, but it is entirely possible that we could be talking about a loss. But either way, I think we're in for a pretty fun football game on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I totally agree. And as a little side note, I like the way the schedule goes this year with the, you know, you get the Argos in the second week of the season, then obviously Labor Day, and then another one. Yeah, I like that a lot. I think you space it out. I've never been a huge fan of the back-to-back on Labor Day. I know a lot of people are, but I like how it goes. I like the second week, Labor Day, and then last week of the season. I think it's great.
I think the only reason the back-to-back works is that to me, it's unfair for one of these teams to have to play on a Monday and then play again on a Saturday against a team that's had more rest. You know what True. I mean? Like, the Ticats get a bye this year after Labor Day. The Argos, I can't remember who they're playing. But the only games played on Labor Day this weekend, or Labor Day this season on Labor Day weekend, are the three interprovincial, I guess not interprovincial when it comes to the Riders, but, you know, the three big rivalries, Argos and Ticats, Edmonton and Calgary and Saskatchewan and Winnipeg are the only three games. Like, the other three teams are on a bye. So we get to two back-to-backs in Edmonton, Calgary, and Winnipeg, Saskatchewan. And then I think the Argos play – I think they play the Owls. Maybe they play the Lions. I can't remember. I know, but they definitely play someone, whereas the Ticats get a bye. And it's like I feel that that's – it's a disadvantage to the team that has to play Monday, so that's why I understand doing the back-to-backs, even though I'm like you, spacing it out, like one at the beginning of the year, one at the middle of the year, one at the end. That is pretty good for me because then you don't get – you get a chance to like let the rivalry build some more, and like it's early in the season. You know, the Ticats haven't lost. Like it's only week two, but like, man, the Argos win. They knock the Ticats down. Like then you get Labor Day, and that's always intense. Then who knows? Maybe the end of the season, that last week of the season, could be for playoff positioning. Could be for a playoff spot. Period. So, no, I'm with you. I do like this, but I do understand why you do the back to backs, just from kind of a competitive advantage standpoint.
Right, and it's kind of weird. Like Not a huge fan of the Toronto-Hamilton back-to-back, but I do like the Edmonton-Calgary back-to-back.
That is weird.
Yeah, it's very strange. Maybe because I like going to the Edmonton, the second half of the back-to-back in Edmonton. It's always a big crowd and such, so maybe that has something to do with it.
Maybe it does. So that's it for this week. That was Pod Squeeze for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.